Good day, and welcome to the Bioteq AG full Q3 results 2021 conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Dr. Michael Ramroth. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much for the nice opening remarks. This is Michael Ramroth. Good morning, everybody. On this cold and foggy day, I would like to extend a very warm welcome to all of you. All of you who are interested in Bioteq, its performance in the past and its future. Especially with regard to the future, I'm grateful that today Jörg Schüttrumpf is with me, head of our R&D project, and he will familiarize you with the progress we have on our R&D projects later on. Let me start with the most recent activities triggered by Grifols. As you know, Grifols SA has on September 17th published that they have reached an agreement with our current major shareholder, the CREAT Group, that they would acquire all the shares from CREAT. That, having reached this agreement and acquiring more than 89% of the voting rights, has, according to German law, triggered then the obligation to make a takeover offer for all other outstanding Bioteq shareholders, and that they have announced on September 17th, and had followed then with the official publication of the voluntary public takeover bid on October 26th, by saying that they would invite all remaining shareholders of Bioteq to tender their shares for a price of 43 euros for each ordinary share and 37 euros for preference shares. We, as management board, have together with our supervisory board, reviewed the offer documents and came in a joint recent statement, which we have published last week, to the conclusion that we feel that this offer is fair and adequate, and that we recommend our shareholders to accept the takeover offer by Grifols SA. The strategic considerations, as outlined by Grifols in the offer document, states that it's the aim to provide a more complete range of plasma-derived products as a combined group of companies producing such plasma protein products, and that with that, the availability of life-saving medicines is improved by combining Bioteq's innovative pipeline, Jörg will explain to you a little later on, and the extended manufacturing capacities with the existing Grifols activities. All in all, we are very pleased that they have expressly stated that they would like to intensify and accelerate our trimodulin and fibrinogen development. Now, if you just have our presentation in front of you, if you look at page seven, you see that they started in negotiating with Tianjin Germany Pharmaceutical Holdings AG, which actually is the owner of the Bioteq shares, and Tianjin Germany itself is owned by CREAT. They have reached an agreement with CREAT to buy Tianjin Germany Pharmaceutical Holdings AG with including the 89.88% of the ordinary shares and the 1.04% of the preference shares they own. Keep in mind that we, as Bioteq, have received a shareholder loan in the amount of 290 million euro from Tianjin Germany, which will prevail and remain. Turning to page eight of our presentation, you see the current situation that CREAT owns 100% of Tianjin Germany Pharmaceutical Holdings AG, and this Tianjin Germany Pharmaceutical Holdings AG owns the shares of Bioteq and has granted the shareholder loan. Grifols has now agreed to buy the 100% of the Tianjin Germany Pharmaceutical Holdings AG shares and would then be, instead of CREAT, the owner of this German-based holding for Bioteq. This agreement to acquire the 100% of this holding company is, of course, subject to antitrust clearance, antitrust filings, had been submitted to the authorities in Spain, Germany, Austria, and Turkey. And the same prerequisite of having this approval of those four antitrust authorities is also the precondition for the settlement of the takeover offer they have published in October 26. If you look at the timeline and process shown on page 11 of our presentation, you see that since the 26th of October, the acceptance period has started, and Grifols has opted for the 10 weeks acceptance period so that our shareholders have now the time to think about tendering their shares till the 3rd of January 2020. And according to German law, there's another additional acceptance period of 2 weeks time frame starting on the 8th of January, lasting till the 21st of January 2020, and then everybody should know how many shares have been tendered to Grifols, and of course, then settlement could take place, provided that at that day, all four antitrust authorities in Germany, Spain, Turkey, and Austria have given their green light for the transaction. If that's not the case, then the settlement of the tender offering process will stay open till all four merger control clearances have been given. As you can see in the offer document, there's also a so-called long stop date published as of the 17th of December 2022, which means that the takeover offer would be null and void if up to the 7th of December 2022, not all four prerequisites, the four merger control clearances, have not been granted then. So we are, as you can imagine, also the same way excited to get to know at the end of the acceptance period how many of the existing shareholders are prepared to tender their shares to Grifols, and we have to be patient till January till we get the result of this process. That doesn't stop us, of course, to do business as usual, and therefore I would continue with presenting you the financial data as of September 30th, so for the 9 months of 2021. You see that we have on page 13 of our presentation that we have achieved revenues in the amount of 371.4 million euros compared to 341.6 million in 2020, in the same period, the same three quarters in 2020. If we deduct the operating costs and expenses in 2021 of about 382.6 million, we get to an operating loss, EBIT number of minus 11.2, which is a little bit higher than the minus 7.8 we had achieved in the same period in 2020. Financial result and tax payments reduced the loss or increased the loss further, so that the earnings after tax of Biotest Group was in the end minus 28.3 million compared to minus 31.8 in the year before. If we look at the sales development in the world compared to last year, we had been 8.7% better in our sales performance. And with the exception of the intercontinental business, all other regions we are serving with our products have done better, and we have sold more products in Central Europe, East South Europe, Middle East Africa, and France. Only in intercontinental, the sales and revenues had been a little bit lower than in the previous year period due to the fact that the pricing in the other areas of the world was more attractive, so we concentrated on selling our products in the other regions of the world. If we compare and reconcile, you know, the EBIT, which we have achieved in 2020 with minus 7.8 and leading in explanation to the minus 11.2 million we achieved this year in the first three quarters, you see that we have a reduced gross profit of minus 10.5 million, especially due to the fact that pricing with factor 8 was lower than in the period before, and also albumin prices were have been negatively developed compared to last year. On the other hand, we spent less in marketing and distribution, 1.4 million. We had lower administrative expenses as compared to 2020. And also our R&D expenses are shown with 1.3 million lower, but not our activities had been smaller or lower. We have booked a subsidy of the German government in this 2021, so that comes to this lower R&D expense figure shown in our 9 months report. The other situation was also 3.6 million better, so we end up with a minus 11.2 million as earnings before or loss before interest and taxes. Now, those of you who are following us for a longer time always know that those negative numbers, they are officially characterized by the fact that we have started this Biotech's Next Level project. We are expanding our capacity here and have three new products under development, and all those Biotech Next Level costs counted for 57.5 million expenses in this year. So if we deduct those 57.5 million from the loss we have shown and reported, we would have achieved a positive 46.3 million in our actual business, which has the actual business outside of BNL. Looking into the 57.5 million Biotech Next Level costs, they are split in 27.7 million facility costs, because we have already built the new facility, the new plant, and have commissioned this plant. So the project is almost completed. And we have also on the R&D side spent 29.3 million, 10.9 million for IgG next generation, 12.9 million for trimodulin, the IgM concentrate, and we spent 5.5 million fibrinogen. Altogether, 57.5 million for the future of Biotest. Deducting the financial result, the negative financial result, and the taxes from the EBIT, we come to the earnings after tax, loss after tax indeed this year, and you see that we had a positive variation in the valuation of ATMA shares held by the trustee of 2.5 million. We had to spend higher interest expense of 2.6 million, but we had a positive currency exchange and hedging effect of plus 6.3 million, so that the financial result and tax amount of 2020 of minus 2020.7 million had been reduced to minus 16.5 million in the end. Looking at the balance sheet, you see there's almost no big change in it. We had net debt of at the end of September of 424 million, and our equity ratio, you know, has been compared to last year now lower to 36% of the total amount of assets of our balance sheet. Working capital developed quite, the cash flow developed quite nicely. We had a positive 12.2 million positive cash flow from our operating activities. Working capital figure had been in total a positive 1.8 billion positive cash flow contribution. We had to deduct, of course, interest and tax payments of 10.7 million. So in the end, cash flow from operating activities, including, you know, working capital changes and tax and interest payments, was then still a positive 3.3 million. And with that, I would conclude the presentation of our financial figures for the 9 months of 2021. And I would turn over to Jörg now to explain and give us an update on the B&L projects. And of course, please save your questions for the end of the session, and then we can also come back to the numbers. Jörg, may I ask you to continue?
Yeah, so good morning, everyone. Also from my side, it's a pleasure for me to lead you through the update on our R&D projects. And I will go through project by project and highlight a little bit what is new and also what might be of main interest for you. Okay, let's start on slide 22 with our IgG Next Generation project. This is our 10% IVIG manufactured in the new manufacturing plant. This product brings really the newest technical highlights with it and is distinct also for the U.S. market so that we can cover with the new IVIG the whole world. It's a master product of the new plant, and with this also the first product that comes out of the plant. We will increase our yield with this new production process, but it's also a process that allows us then to manufacture also additional proteins such as trimodulin, which I will explain later on. We also included some optimization of the product quality, such as lower IgA content or lower isoagglutinin content, so that this will be really a state-of-the-art immunoglobulin for the biotest future. And then I come to the clinical development, and my main message here is that really we have green light. We have all the trials, the two trials we need for registration finalized. We have very good results concerning efficacy and safety and tolerability. So for both the primary immune deficiency and the ITP indication, which is necessary also for Europe. We are now looking into the future, also planning a third indication. This third indication is to address the high dosage market, which is especially important in the U.S., but also this will allow us to differentiate our product from competitors and position it in attractive niches. So here, really green light, everything is going ahead as planned, and this you will see also later is important also that we can start manufacturing in the new plant. Now I come to the next project, fibrinogen concentrate. Fibrinogen is a very abundant coagulation factor in the plasma, and it's important because it's the first protein that is missing when you have severe bleeding. And this is more and more recognized and also measured by point of care diagnostics. So this is really a market where we expect a growth in the future, and we therefore invested here also in the clinical development in two directions. The first is in congenital fibrinogen deficiency. This trial we already completed, also with very good results concerning efficacy and safety of the product, and this is one cornerstone for the future approval. And the second trial is in acquired fibrinogen deficiency. This indication is very important for us because it's a big indication where in acquired blood loss in surgery or in accident, in emergency situations, fibrinogen is given. This trial is still ongoing. We had, let's say, some... we didn't recruit as fast as we wanted at the beginning because of the COVID-19 pandemic, where many of these surgeries were postponed, but in April this year we started again good recruitment, and so the trial is on track and we are going forward. And fibrinogen is also one of the products where we are quite advanced in the clinical development that also Grifols recognized, and where we think we can accelerate the program with a new investor and with combined forces, especially targeting the U.S. market. And then I switch to the next product, which is trimodulin. Here is really where we have also most news from the last quarter. Trimodulin is an immunoglobulin, but it's unique, and it's unique also for BioTest and worldwide because it has a high content of IgM and IgA, and this we are developing it in severe COVID-19 in a severe community-acquired pneumonia, and it has also other relevant upside indications where we could think about expanding usage of this product in a more distant future. What is important for the product is we have different modes of action which normal immunoglobulins don't have. One important thing is this targeting the host inflammatory process, and this is important not only in SCAP but now especially in COVID, and I will come to this in a moment. But it's also that, of course, like other immunoglobulins, we have opsonization of causal pathogens and neutralization of microbial virulence factors. We have a very high medical need there in this indication, especially in the emergency indication and patients in intensive care unit. And now I go to slide 27. And this is especially the case for infectious lung diseases. And just to show you where we are there with SCAP and also with COVID-19, the clinical picture is very similar, and this was also the reason why we said we can translate our result from SCAP, where we mainly have bacterial sepsis, but we also have some patients with virus infections or with fungi, to SARS-CoV-2, so COVID-19, where we have the viral sepsis. And we did phase two trials in both of these indications. The first phase two in SCAP, the SIGMA trial, the results were already published some time ago, but in COVID-19, this is really new, and we haven't yet published the whole results, and this is why I would like to give you some insight on this. So the trial we performed there, now I switch to slide 28, is the ESCOVID trial. Just to give you an idea, the trial was performed in France, Spain, Russia, and Brazil. We had 16 active sites with 166 patients altogether, and the trial was performed between October 2020 and June 2021. And what we measured in this trial was a composite endpoint. This is based on a WHO ordinal scale where we combine clinical worsening and the 28 all-cause mortality. And you see on the slide in this red box, this is basically where the patients were included. And then we measured how many of these patients worsened. And overall, it's basically that in the we had a very severe patient population that around 30 to 40% of patients worsened or died. So a big really patient that need urgently some kind of additional treatment. And I think that's also the topic in this area. There's a high medical need and there's no real big improvement yet from other drugs, so that we went in there with our trial, and you probably saw our press release in August where we were first a little bit disappointed because we didn't meet the primary endpoint. However, we then went into post hoc analysis when we received the full data set in September. And so very quickly we saw that we could make a significant benefit almost for two-thirds of the patients, but these were patients which were a little bit earlier in the disease. We had some effects of countries and centers and could measure also with different biomarkers that there were some patients in the trial which were too advanced so that we really couldn't anymore have an effect on the course of the disease. So overall, in this patient population we then defined with this earlier systemic inflammation, we saw a 15 percentage point lower mortality and worsening of the disease. And this is quite significant if you compare also with other drugs in this area where you consider already 4%-6% improvement significant. And with this, and now I switch to slide 30, is really something that was not only recognized by us, but also by the Paul-Ehrlich Institute, the authority here in Germany, where we presented the results and which recommended also to continue this development in this patient population for phase III. And this is the big news from, let's say, yesterday. We were informed just on the phone that there's an intent from the German Ministries of Health and of Education and Science to fund our development in this area and to support our development. We haven't yet received really the final funding notice, but we believe that this is really giving us some tailwind to accelerate our program in COVID-19 and go forward with it. And then on the left side, you see also our plans for ESCAPE. Here in the ESCAPE indication, so the pneumonia based mainly on bacteria, we also want to go forward. We have very good results from phase II. And here we also have the support, and this was announced by Grifols, that Grifols wants to support us to go as fast as we can. So we are now planning everything to accelerate our activities also on this part so that we can go forward as fast as we can. Okay, with this good news from trimodulin, I switch to the last phase III trial we currently started. This is in Cytotect. It's for the prevention of the transmission of cytomegalovirus from the mother to the child. We got approval for the trial already in August. Now we also initiated the first center, and we are waiting basically every day for the first patient to be included in this trial. Cytomegalovirus infection in the fetus is a common congenital infection, and this may cause severe developmental retardation, such as also hearing loss and neurological late damage in the newborns. Although it's frequent, it's really not well known. Everybody knows HIV transmission from the mother to the child or rubella transmission from mother to the child, but not a cytomegalovirus infection of the child. However, it's really the biggest problem with around 50,000 babies in the EU and US affected by CMV infection every year. So it's an important medical need, and there's currently no approved therapy in this indication. We have already some time been working on this issue, and we identified also a protocol in which we expect a significant reduction of this transmission, and this is included in the trial. And with this, the trial completed, we then seek also marketing authorization in this indication for Cytotect CP Biotest. Yeah, and with this, I'm at the end of my short update on the R&D projects, and with this, I will hand over again to Maike to continue with the update from other company aspects.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And the progress on the R&D pipeline front goes hand in hand with the progress of our Biotest Next Level production capacity expansion program. Here, to remind you, it's our goal to increase the number of products we get out of 1 liter plasma. Up to now, we're getting IgG, albumin, and factor VIII out of 1 liter plasma, and in the future, we would add trimodulin and fibrinogen to this product portfolio, being produced out of 1 liter plasma. And up to now, we are selling those three products in Europe and Middle East and Asia, but the American market is missing, the U.S. market is missing, and with the new products, with the new IgG next-gen, trimodulin and fibrinogen, as Jörg just pointed out, we would also like to re-enter the U.S. market with those products. In order to do so, we have to produce such products in the new facility. Here, see on page 34, T0 has been the start of the stability period, means that we have successfully produced already IgG next-gen and have reached the point where we have started the period to prove the stability of this product. As you know, we have to prove after 6, 9, and 12 months that IgG next-generation manufactured in this new facility is as good as a freshly produced product just one day after the production, so that the same efficacy and the same safety is also prevailing after 6, 9, and 12 months. And if we have those data, we can file the final submission in the EU for getting a marketing authorization for this new product. So while we waiting to the end of the stability data periods, you know, we in parallel, we are preparing all the paperwork in order to submit then as soon as possible the file for the marketing authorization in Europe, and expect that the authorities will also process it in an accelerated way, so that in 2022, beginning of 2023, we feel that we are able to launch the product then in Europe. And in parallel, also we would head towards the FDA filing as well in order to get access to the U.S. market. With that, I have already switched to slide 35. With regard to IgG Next Gen, we are, as I said, in the phase of preparing the dossier. At the same time, we continue to optimize our process and we ramp up for commercial production. Same is true for human albumin, which is also, of course, produced in BNL. Here, the commissioning of the human albumin factor part of the factory is ongoing. And on the marketing and sales side, they are starting the launch activities for the new IgG next generation. All of that has to be done, of course, with experienced and educated employees. So the hiring and training phase of employees is ongoing, because in the end, we will have probably more than 300 people more here at the site in Dreieich in order to produce those new products just outlined. Producing such new products needs a lot of plasma, so we are continuing to open up centers, plasma collection centers in Europe. Europe is a little bit too broad. As you know, there's only 4 countries in Europe where it's allowed to really collect plasma on a commercial basis from private companies, and we are active in Germany, Hungary, and in the Czech Republic. We opened up to now 2 new plasma centers in the Czech Republic and 2 in Hungary. So now 26 centers are operating and collect plasma for us, and we were just about to open another one in Czech Republic, but here Corona has led to a short delay. So, but still, I guess we will see an opening still in Czech Republic in this year. And, of course, there are more and further plans to continue the expansion of our plasma collection centers in Europe. And with that, I would confirm that our guidance. We said that we would grow our revenue figure in a middle single-digit percentage range in 2021, and we will reduce our EBIT, which was at the end of September, minus 11.2 million, and we will get into the range of minus 5 to minus 10 million as we see it as of today. Yeah, and with that, I would conclude our presentation and would open the floor for your questions, please.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star one to ask a question. Our first question comes from Peter Verdult with Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Peter Verdult here from Citi. Three questions, please. Collections, the pipeline, and this improved manufacturing process. Starting with the latter, because a quick one. You mentioned your new IG manufacturing process will deliver yields of 4.5 grams a liter. Can you just give us some ballpark quantification as to what sort of percentage improvement in yield that represents? Are we talking 5 to 10%, 10 to 20%, or something more material? Secondly, on collection trends, I think Agria Biotest is around 5 to 10%, Grifols is at 20. Just what you're seeing in terms of recent monthly trends as it relates to collections in Europe. Are you seeing any further acceleration as we come out of lockdown? And then lastly, on the pipeline, just interested to hear about the timelines when you think fibrinogen and IgM will launch. Perhaps could I push you to give your view as to the commercial sales potential for these two assets or proteins in both the US and Europe? Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for your questions. Let us start with the improved manufacturing process. Indeed, we would like to increase the recovery rate from 53 to 60%. So that's an increase of more than 10%, 10, 12, 11% in order to answer your question with regard to that. Collection, plasma collection in Europe is much better in the meantime compared to the situation in the United States. While in the United States, still the volumes being collected are, you know, between 20 and 25% lower than before the pandemic. In Europe, at least in our centers in Germany, Czech Republic, and Austria, we have reached the pre-corona collection levels, so we don't see any downturn anymore. So we have been able to activate our old donors as well as have motivated new ones to get into our centers and also in our increased number of centers. So having said that, so we, and I cross my fingers as we will continue up to now, have managed to get, despite corona pandemic, get back to the old collection levels and volumes. Can we even accelerate the opening up of new centers? Yes, we are trying to do so, but this is less a question of the pandemic, more a question of finding, you know, suitable places and, you know, getting agreements with landlords and put the interior in place and things like that. And all that has to be done with an organization to secure that we have also the personnel afterwards for operating such centers. So, yes, we are increasing our efforts to do that. And probably in the past, we have opened between 3 and 4 centers each year. And we would like to increase this number in 2022 to maybe 6 or 7 in next year.
Okay, and then I can answer that your last question, where you ask about the timelines and also the commercial perspective of trimodulin and fibrinogen. Of course, it's let's say for let's start with fibrinogen. We are expecting to be on the market with fibrinogen end of 2024. These were our plans for the US. This would be later. And so far, we just estimated and give numbers for the European market, where we expected around 50 million sales, peak sales. This, however, we think can grow substantially when we also target the US market in the future. With trimodulin, here we are still in the planning phase really for the different trials. We also have and experienced very different timelines, for example, for COVID-19 and for SCAP. So it could be something really for COVID early as 2024, but it could be also that it will be 2025 or later with SCAP. And this depends really also very much on how the pandemic is going. You can imagine that there's some or let's say we cannot estimate very well how we will recruit patients even in a big trial. And also the SCAP patients could be influenced by the COVID pandemic. So that it's very hard to say the timeline. So far, we saw for trimodulin peak sales of around 300 million, but this was really capacity limited. And we believe also that here with Grifols' new investor and with a vision for the future, there's that the market potential is much higher and that we can address a higher market once the product is really further developed. Okay.
Thank you.
I hope I could answer your question.
Thank you. Yes.
And once again, to ask a question, press star one. We will now take our next question from Dennis Berzanin with Pareto Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, Dennis Berzanin from Pareto Securities. Thank you for taking my questions. My first one is related to Q3 performance. I was just wondering if you could just give us some pushes and pulls on the Q3 figures. And the one topic for early in the year was the cost inflation with plasma sourcing. The pricing was going higher and higher. How is that going so far? Have you seen stabilization in terms of that? And also, what is the rationale for not raising the guidance for the full year? You have right now the guidance of mid-single-digit percentage, but we've seen so far for the 9 months much stronger revenue growth. So should we expect some kind of a setback in the fourth quarter? And then on the pipeline, I was wanting to follow up about trimodulin. It's definitely good to hear that you've see some benefit for a subset of patients for trimodulin for COVID-19. But I was wondering what your thoughts are in terms of the developing landscape with the breakthrough oral therapeutics coming from Pfizer and Merck, and your rationale for really going through the clinical development, given the current landscape. And then finally, I was wondering if you could give us some approximate one-time costs estimate expected for the next 2 years, in terms of B&L facility costs. I think last time you mentioned there was really the major cost was trimodulin, 30 or 40 million for the next 2 years, for each year for the next 2 years. I was wondering if you could give us an update on that. Thank you.
Yeah, let me start with the push and pulls of the performance in the last year. Indeed, as you mentioned, we have seen price increases, especially on the sourcing side, sourcing plasma, due to the fact that, U.S. is covering probably 65% to 70% of the worldwide demand for plasma. And in the United States, 25%, let's put that as a proxy number here, 25% of plasma has been collected less than before. Corona prices spiked quite a lot in the U.S. There's almost no U.S. plasma being available for companies like us. So if we would buy plasma at all, we would have probably to pay more than $200 per liter. Here, for the first time, we are benefiting of not having to serve the U.S. market. We are dealing with the markets in Europe, Middle East, and Asia, where we can also sell products out of non-U.S. plasma, meaning European plasma. And you have heard that with regard to our own European sources, we are back to the pre-corona collection volumes. So nevertheless, we have seen, since the other companies are also trying to compensate the lower amounts of US plasma with European plasma. We have seen also price increases on the side of European plasma. Here we are talking about price increases during the first three quarters of 12 to 17% per liter of European plasma. And the full effect of this will be, of course, shown, you know, in the months to come, because in the beginning of the year we still have taken advantage of the, let's call it, cheaper plasma we bought and sourced 6 to 9 months ago. On the pricing side, looking at the average sales price, I mentioned that the prices for the plasmatic factor 8 are heavily under pressure worldwide. So we have lost here on the pricing front. Albumin is also not very stable anymore. We are now with prices of below 2 euros per gram. The only upside we have seen are the price, is the pricing for IgG as consequence of the reduced supply of IgG out of U.S. plasma. Also, the prices for IgG worldwide have gone up. Here we are talking about price increases, you know, for next year deliveries for the new contracts in the range of 5 to 10% increases. Yeah, why don't we increase our guidance with regard to sales? We are right now, or at the end of September, we are 8.7% better than last year. We still feel that, you know, mid-single-digit number, so what about 5 to 6% is confirmed. You know, if in the end it would be 7%, you probably wouldn't be angry about that. But as you can see, if you're trying to buy other materials at all, you will see that it's almost unpredictable how the markets behave. And there's also some kind of uncertainty, you know, with regard to year-end purchasing behavior of our clinics and distributors worldwide. So being on the conservative side, we feel that it's prudent to stay with the guidance as we have published it in March of this year. Mirjörg, can you answer a little bit landscape?
Yeah, I will go on for the COVID-19 landscape. You mentioned the different drug treatments that are coming on the market right now. All these treatments from Pfizer or Merck are really targeting the early infection population. We are quite late, really, the patients that need respiratory support, where we are with our drug. So we see that there will be also in the future many patients who didn't receive drugs early on, or who where the vaccination didn't work, or who were not vaccinated, which will have a need for this late therapy. However, you are right that, of course, the pandemic and how all of this is developing is not really easy to predict. And therefore, and this is what I mentioned, that for us this risk sharing with public support is also a very important element. And I think that's also what is recognized publicly, that this could be needed, that companies like us go into the risk of this development. And so far, we really see only positive points for us to go in this direction. We can accelerate our program, we can be faster on the market, and we are targeting anyway any kind of infectious lung disease. So for us, it shouldn't matter also from our mode of action of the drug if it's a viral infection or a bacterial infection, and so we can cover the whole picture. And I think that's basically why we see it only has advantages for us also to pursue COVID-19.
Dennis, have we answered your questions?
Sorry, one more. The last one was on the expected one-time costs for the next year or two. You know, given the evolving clinical development programs, what should we expect for the one-time costs, basically?
No, thank you. I indeed forgot this question. Sorry for that. Yeah, indeed. No, we expect that an amount of, you know, 35 to 45 million you will see also in the next 2 years for the continuation of this program, you know, as Jörg pointed out, you know, with regard to third indication for IgG next gen, continuation of possibly two phase three studies with trimodulin, and the finalization of the fibrinogen phase three study in acquired fibrinogen deficiency.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And again, to ask a question, press star one. We will take our next question from Klaus Schulte with Solventis. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. Good morning. I've got a question regarding the IgG targets, the treatments which are targeted by IgG, and it's, the one is a primary immune deficiency, the other is the, I cannot pronounce it, Purpura
IgP.
Something. Yes, could you in simple words say what is the difference between these two treatments?
Yeah, so IgG has basically two ways of acting. One is to avoid infections, and this is what antibody normally do. This is the PID indication. It's a congenital form where these antibodies are missing and where you give it. There are other forms, for example, after chemotherapy, where you can also give this, but this is one mechanism to avoid infection. And then you have another mechanism, which is targeting more or less a complex of autoimmune diseases. And this is ITP. This is an autoimmune disease, and this is basically a model disease for this to show that the immune modulatory effect of IgG is working on the disease. And therefore also the indication in Europe, at least, there's a core SMPC, so a core document where you get a whole range of indications when the drug gets approved. It covers both this kind of infectious diseases and also all kinds of autoimmune diseases, and with these two indications, we basically cover the requirements to get this whole set of indications.
Are there specific autoimmune diseases which are targeted, or is it a general?
No, there are specific ones where it's a good clinical evidence, such as many neurological diseases, like, and now it gets complicated, CIDP. So a chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, this is a major indication, but there are also a lot of small ones, Guillain-Barré syndrome, there are some other also inflammatory diseases, for example, of the arteria, like Kawasaki syndrome, and really a whole set of different things, but it's our specific indications.
Hmm. Are there plans to also go in trials to use IgG as an antibiotic?
Yeah. So this is the PID indication. This is basically avoiding the infection.
Okay.
And therefore, we showed this in patients who don't have the antibodies because of a genetic defect. However, we will also get the indication for other patients with chemotherapy after transplant or something who have a cause why they have low antibodies, and then we can supplement it.
Okay, then I've got a question regarding U.S. plasma. Since you are planning to target also the U.S. market, my understanding is that then you also need U.S. plasma. So Griffiths has a lot of many centers in the U.S., and I assume that Griffiths will supply U.S. plasma to Biotest. But on the other hand, there were plans communicated over the last quarters that you also are trying to set up plasma centers together with partners in the U.S. Are those plans still ongoing, or what is going on in this direction?
A very good question, Mr. Schroeder. Thank you very much. Indeed, the switch from a Chinese majority shareholder to a Spanish majority shareholder opens up a quite lot of new possibilities for Biotest. First of all, we are now allowed, according to U.S. law, CFIUS rules, you know, this Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States, to own and operate our own plasma collection centers again in the States. And the agreements we have in place with such independent partners, you have just mentioned, where those partners are partly financed by us, are building up new centers, and those centers would then exclusively collect plasma for Biotest. Those centers we could now also buy, you know, after having lost this Chinese limitation with regard to the U.S. government. That's the one route we are probably pursuing in the future. And the second is indeed, you remember that Grifols bought our old BPC U.S. plasma centers 3 years ago. So indeed, they have U.S. plasma, and of course they indicated that we would have access to U.S. plasma. But of course, also Grifols now is suffering under the lower collection volumes in the U.S. right now. So we both have to increase our efforts, you know, to get, you know, the U.S. plasma collection volumes up and back to former levels in order to satisfy our demand for our end products, which the demand for those end products is, as you know, still going up.
Would there be a chance that basically Grifols would buy back the Biotest would buy back the plasma collection centers from Grifols? Maybe not now, but later on, when the BNL is ramped up and you are getting cash, as you like it.
Probably would have to borrow the cash from Grifols in order to buy the centers back from them. So, to be honest, Mr. Schlote, we haven't considered that, discussed that yet.
Okay.
Let's put that up on our list of things to follow up with.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
And there are no further questions at this time, so I would like to turn the call back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
So thank you very much for listening in this morning and giving us your interesting questions. We hope you could satisfy your interest in Biotest and have given you some nice outlook perspectives, you know, for the business of Biotest in the coming months and hopefully years, maybe then, or not maybe, probably with a new shareholder. Thank you very much and have a good day. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.